You're in tune with KTOO FM, and I'm your host for Juno Afternoon today, Danny Peterson. We will be listening to a Spirit of Youth series at the top of the hour because our first guest, Katie Spangler, has canceled, but she will reschedule later on, and next week maybe. Irene Morris will be here at 3:15 with details about this Saturday's Earth Day. We'll learn more about tomorrow's National Astronomy Day with guest Steve Casas. Judge Walter Carpinetti and K.J. Metcalf will give us a preview of Monday's panel and community discussion on life after prison. If you missed a Juno Afternoon or want to listen again, you can catch us at ktoo.org.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. A small First Nation in Ontario, Canada, has declared a state of emergency after two recent deaths. The declaration is meant to help address suicide, Dan Karpinchuk reports.
The fragile community of just over 300 people has been thrown into grief time and time again over the past year. The two deaths were only the most recent. There have been 7 suicides over the past year and 20 attempted suicides. Chief Peter Munias says people are fearing for the stability of other families.
The suicide has happened within a few months at a time, and it's coming on to the point where we think that it's happening frequently now, and our people have lived to expectation of sad news almost every day.
The two recent suicides on the Nishkandaga First Nation come just a few months after another young man took his life in December. That prompted the community to put its young people on a suicide watch to prevent additional deaths. Now, with the most recent deaths, Munia says the community can no longer cope. Community and regional leaders are hoping that the declaration of a state of emergency will lead to help from the Red Cross and from provincial emergency management officials. Munia says they are also looking for government help to deal with serious prescription drug and alcohol addiction problems. He estimates that more than half of the adults in the community are addicted to painkillers. He says Nishkandaga is also dealing with many social problems, housing, lack of adequate funding, and the long-term effects of residential schools. The federal health minister has promised aid, saying Health Canada will work closely with the community and send both additional nursing and counseling staff to help. For National Native News, I'm Dan Karpinchuk.
Flags on the Navajo Nation are at half-staff in honor of Albert Smith. Smith, who passed away Wednesday, was a Navajo code talker. He served in the Pacific Theater during World War II and was later an advisor on the movie Wind Talkers, which depicted the service of Navajo code talkers. In 2001, Smith received the Congressional Medal of Honor for his military service. Last November, he participated in New York City's Veterans Day Parade. Funeral services are being held today in New Mexico. He was 88 years old at the time of his death. Cherokee actor Wes Studi is being inducted into the Hall of Great Western Performers. The event at the National Cowboy and Western Heritage Museum is taking place Saturday in Oklahoma. Studi began acting in the 1980s and had breakthrough films in the 90s, including Dances with Wolves. Here he is in this 2009 interview on the national program Native America Calling.
Last of the Mohicans, more or less, put me on the map, and I began to work a lot more after that, but that was, kind of a breakthrough.
Since then, Studi has many more television and film credits. He recently completed Road to Paloma and will begin shooting a new film this summer. Studi joins Native actor Jay Silverheels in the Hall of Great Western Performers. This week, a new trailer for the movie The Lone Ranger was released online. Actor Johnny Depp portrays the Native American character Tonto.
From the great beyond, a vision told me a great warrior would help me on my quest.
One who has been to the other side and returned.
Depp and others involved in the film answered questions from fans Wednesday at an event in Las Vegas, Nevada. He was asked if he researched Native American culture for the role. Depp said he tried to find a way into the character that was different and did not take away from Jay Silverheels, the Native actor who played Tonto in the 1950s television series.
As far as research in terms of the Native Americans and the Comanche and the Navajo and those people out, the human beings in that area and all nations, really, the goal really was to try to, in my own small way, right the many wrongs that have been done to those people.
Indian Country moviegoers will get their chance to see his portrayal when The Lone Ranger hits theaters in July. During this week in 1878, Sheldon Jackson School was founded in Sitka, Alaska, as an industrial and training school for Tlingit boys. This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kiwanis Broadcast Corporation, with offices in Anchorage, Alaska. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, and the Ford Foundation, with funding from ConocoPhillips, Alaska's oil and gas company. Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
And we're back on a Juno afternoon. I'm here with my first guest, Irene Morris. She's here for the Earth Day event happening tomorrow, April 20th, at the Nugget Mall. And that's happening noon to 3 p.m. It's totally free, open to the public. Irene, what's your title for tomorrow's event?
Well, I'll tell you what happened this year. For the last 7 years, we've had our Earth Day event at the Glacier, and due to federal funding cuts, we weren't able to have it there, so I had to kind of scramble and find a place where we could celebrate Earth Day. The Nugget Mall was available, and they've been really great about accommodating us. So to me, our theme kind of this year is just back to the basic Earth Day. What I found is that we have all these wonderful organizations in Alaska or in Juneau that help us help the Earth in one way or the other, whether it's with electricity or nature or wildlife. And so the term Earth Day every day really is appropriate for Juneau, because what you'll find is we have 13 organizations there that work every single day, 365 days a year, to help Juno and help the Earth. And you have an opportunity to come out and not only learn what they have to teach you, but you have an opportunity to join them. And I will be mentioning all of them while I'm here, because we wouldn't be having it if it wasn't for the great organizations in Juno.
So what is the event? What is going to be happening exactly tomorrow?
Okay, well, from 12 to 3, we're going to be in the community room. We're going to have several tables full of information. A lot of information is on the adult level, but there's also a lot of children's crafts and ideas and games for them. So it'll be for all ages. And then also the Saga, our local organization, is going to hold – come on in. We're going to hold a trash pickup over at Jordan Creek, and Ashley is going to talk to you about that in just a minute.
Okay.
And we also will be having at 1 o'clock the All Nations Children Dancers will be performing. So we have a little bit of entertainment. It's not going to be quite as big as it has been in the last few years, but it definitely will have a lot to offer all ages.
And we just had a second guest come in. So what's your name, and what are you doing involved with the event tomorrow?
I'm with Saga, and we're a local nonprofit, and I'm the connections manager for them, and that's a program that has individuals and various nonprofits and schools across the state. So, yeah, we're going to be there organizing the trash cleanup, and we'll go out to Jordan Creek, which is right behind Nugget Mall. We'll be picking up trash and improving that creek.
So it's going to be an event that's also in conjunction with Saga then. And can anyone just jump on board that goes to that event and jump on board with the trash cleanup?
Yeah, absolutely. We'll be providing all the materials. So we'll have gloves and trash bags, and we'll even have some treats for people after they get done, of course, after washing up with some hand sanitizer.
And what does the Saga stand for?
Saga is Southeast Alaska Guidance Association, but we've actually expanded quite a bit beyond Southeast Alaska. We help in up to 33 communities around Alaska in a year with different AmeriCorps members, and the AmeriCorps members do a lot of hands-on learning opportunities either with government agencies or educational institutions.
So what does the organization do exactly?
Well, we have a lot of different programs, but mm-hmm. Specifically our service corps program helps youth and young adults get land management experience and experience working with the National Park Service and the Forest Service and the different land management agencies across the state doing work on, you know, wetland restoration and, you know, cleaning up creeks and invasive species control. So it's a lot of different stuff. And in addition, we also have three other programs that I probably don't have time to get to. But we are hiring 10 positions for the Service Corps program right now. So any Alaskan youth between 17 and 20, we're taking applications on servealaska.org.
Well, Irene, other than SAGA, what are some of the other organizations?
One thing I want to mention is, what time are you signing everyone up?
We're doing the trash cleanup at 12:30.
Yeah, so anyone can join. Just come on, sign up, and you'll get to do your part tomorrow. The other organizations that are going to be participating are Alaska Wildlife Alliance, which has had very successful Wildlife Wednesdays. You might have seen them. They promote a lot of Alaska wildlife, and they offer a lot of chances for you to actually participate in what happens on the legal level for Alaska wildlife. The Juneau Audubon Society will be there, all about birds for the whole family. Dick Callahan, who is a local writer, one of my favorite people, is doing a special demonstration on 1 square meter of earth. Creative alternatives for cement. Too much cement in the world, and Dick will tell you how to get out of that. Oceana will be there, having a lot of children's activities about oceans. Turning the Tides, again, is about plastics in the oceans and the way that you can help keep them from happening. Juneau Watershed Projects will be there, talking about our local watersheds and a lot of more children's activities. Alaska Department of Fish and Game is going to have a lot of bear safety and a special scavenger hunt for the children that are participating. Alaska Juneau Raptor Center is going to be there. We will have Blueberry, the raven, will be there for the first hour from 12 to 1, and then Brutus, our red-tailed hawk, will be there for 2 hours after that. Friends of Recycling. Recycling is the easiest way that you can contribute in helping the health of our earth. Discovery Southeast will be there, talking about the children's outdoor education activities that they do. NOAA will be there talking about climate change and our local weather. A very interesting man that I met named Daniel will be talking about harvesting wild plants. And my favorite earth hero, Bill Leedy, will be there with his wonderful gadgets showing you how to you can do solar power, and he'll be there full on. We'll also have face painting from Jane from Thane. She's going to be doing face painting tomorrow. And again, the All Nations Children Dancers will perform at 1 p.m.
Oh, okay. And sounds like a lot of different cool interactive events for kids. Is there any good interactive events for adults to come on and occupy themselves with while they're there?
Well, besides going and picking up trash, yes, actually, there's a lot of crafts for children. There's a lot of activities for children because, to me, a really important part of Earth Day is to introduce Earth Day to children when they're young, so they will reflect on it every year throughout their life. I was around the very first Earth Day, and it's been a big part of my life. The information we have, every organization there has information on the adult level, and not only that, they have ways that you can participate, that you can become one of these organizations or contribute to these organizations. You know, you don't have to be, you know, an Earth hero. You just have to participate in any kind of small way so that you can help on just a basic level how to keep our Earth healthy. You know, it's where we live. It's planet Earth, Mother Earth, and we all need to remember that. And this once a year we get to remind that, but it can be every day of the year.
What was the first Earth Day like?
Well, it was an incredible revelation. That's one thing I have is some information on the first Earth Day, because basically the Earth was in a lot of trouble between air quality, water quality, everything. You know, we had, you know, so much smog, and all of a sudden everyone came together. Senator Gaylord Nelson, it was his idea to have an environmental teach-in. Dennis Hayes is the one that gathered everybody together. 20 million people participated, and on one day, all the Republicans, all the Democrats, all the poor people, the rich people, the tradesmen, the, you know, high class, everyone got together to actually learn about what was going on. And through that, we got the Endangered Species Act, we got the Environmental water protection. We got so many things from that one day, and it has continued and continued to grow to be basically an environmental teach-in. That's what I think of it as.
An environmental teach-in. That's mm-hmm. a really good phrase there.
That's because I'm a 60s person, you know.
Well, is there anything else, that information that people need to know about the event for the garbage pickup day for Saga or the event overall?
No, just show up. The Nugget Mall has proven to be very cooperative, and we were lucky to have it there. And I know it's not quite as nice as and pristine and pretty as the Glacier, but what I'm hoping is we might get some people that ordinarily would not even be paying attention to Earth Day. They might just be walking by while they're shopping and all of a sudden learn something. And that's the whole idea, is to teach people about what this is about.
Well, it sounds like a good cause and a lot of fun. So thank you both so much, Ashley and Irene, for stopping by.
Thank you.
Thank you.
See you tomorrow.
See you tomorrow.
I had a turkey dinner, threw the bones away. They hauled them to the county dump without delay. By the following Thanksgiving, they had turned to clay. They're biodegradable garbage. Good garbage breaks down as it goes. That's why it smells bad to your nose. Bad garbage grows and grows and grows. Garbage is supposed to decompose. Now styrofoam is bad, it lasts 1,000 years. A packing peanut's born and never disappears. So crumple up your comics when you ship your chandeliers. Cause comics are biodegradable garbage. Good garbage breaks down as it goes. That's why it smells bad to your nose. Bad garbage grows and grows and grows. Garbage is supposed to decompose. Every time that we buy food, we also buy the package. Bottles, boxes, bags, and cans, they end up in the garbage. Half of all our cash we're spending on our trash. For the sake of Mother Earth, let's get our money's worth. Only buy biodegradable good garbage. Breaks down as it goes. That's why it smells bad to your nose. Bad garbage grows and grows and grows. Garbage is supposed to decompose.
Good garbage. We'll be right back.
You're listening to a Juno Afternoon. I'm here with my next guest, Steve Kosis. He is the volunteer representative here for the Juno Planetarium. And what's going on tomorrow at the planetarium?
Well, thank you so much for having me. And tomorrow is both Earth Day and Astronomy Day. And National Astronomy Day started in the 70s. It's to promote public education on astronomy. And at the Marie Drake Planetarium here in Juneau, which has been around almost 50 years now, we're going to have shows during the day. In the morning, 11 a.m., we're going to use the projector to show what the stars would be like if it's clear tomorrow, which I hope it will be. And after showing the stars tonight, which is what we call our planetarium show.
And what do you use for the star projector? What is that?
Well, it's an analog projector made in Pennsylvania. It was installed in 1967. And it's a sphere with little pinholes drilled through it. And at the very center of the sphere is a very bright light. And so that projects the stars. And then since it's analog, there's gears and servos that simulate the motion of the stars and of the planets. And we can set up the controls for the latitude and longitude of Juno.
Oh, that's very fascinating. It's like an analog, almost GPS replicator or something. It sounds almost Victorian. Like, do you have to wind it up?
Well, like I said, it's analog, so it is gears and servos, and it has some power supplies in it, and it's Earth-based. So since it's analog projector, we can only see the stars as they'd seem from Earth.
Ah, that's fascinating. And what's happening after that event tomorrow?
Well, at 11 a.m., we're going to use the projector to see what the stars look like from Juno. And after we do that, we're going to have an open house. We'll show the different educational facilities we have at the planetarium. And anyone who's interested in working at the planetarium as a volunteer or using the projector will have instructors available for that. And then in the afternoon, we're going to talk about Alaska's moon rocks, which went missing for 40 years and were recently returned and are now on display at the State Museum.
Do they know how it went missing?
Yes, and Sam Henriksen from the Alaska State Museum is going to talk about how the moon rocks that were given to Alaska by President Nixon from the Apollo 11 mission, which is the first mission to the moon, how they went missing and how they were recovered. And that talk will be at 4 p.m.
Sounds like a recipe for a thriller novel. How did it resurface? Did they know? Did they know that too?
Yes, they do. The person who had the rocks for 40 years approached the state of Alaska and said he would return the rocks for a discount, but he wanted to be paid for them. The state wanted the rocks authenticated, so the rocks were sent to NASA, and they were authenticated at NASA. But then the legal decision was that no one could really own these rocks, and they were returned to our state. In fact, each state in the Union received moon rocks through President Nixon. And these are rocks from Apollo 11. And they're now on display at the Alaska State Museum. And 4 p.m., Steve Henriksen will talk about how they went missing, how they were recovered. And he's also going to talk about the Apollo missions.
What does Steve Henriksen do?
He's the curator at the Alaska State Museum, and obviously he's very busy right now because they're building the new archives building in the form of a parking lot. But he is kindly donating his time to talk about the moon rocks, and he'll also talk about the Apollo missions. Of course, there were Apollo missions 11 to 17. 12 men went to the moon. Of course, we know Apollo 13 didn't make it to the moon. It got turned back. There was a movie about that.
I remember that movie. There should be a movie about this cold case.
Yeah, that's the title of Steve's presentation, Cold Case, Recovering Alaska's Long-Lost Apollo 11 Moon Rocks.
Okay, it sounds really informative, and it's going to go over the whole mission in general, too.
Yes, yes, Steve will cover that.
Was that the first mission to the moon, Apollo 11?
Yes, 1969, July... I've got the actual date in July, but July 1969.
Okay, and then what's going to happen after that event?
At 6 p.m., one of our volunteers at the planetarium, Christina De La Rosa, is going to give a talk on art inspired by the aurora. And this is quite auspicious because this year is a solar max. And in fact, there was a flare April 11, and I saw some northern lights on April 12. And right now, solar activity is down again, but there's always a chance to see some northern lights this year because we're a solar max year. Every 11 years, the sunspot count is at a maximum, and so there's more flares and more chance to see the northern lights. So Christina's going to show artwork from the 19th century to the present time inspired by the aurora, and this is realistic art and also abstract art.
So every 11 years, there's something called a solar max, and it's a year in which there's a higher likelihood of seeing the aurora borealis?
Exactly. Since the 18th century, people have been counting sunspots, and it turns out that there's a cycle of the sunspot count, and every 11 years, there's a maximum number of sunspots. And when there's more sunspots, there's more solar flares, which means that there's more chance for charged particles to enter the Earth's atmosphere and cause northern lights.
Does anyone know why this happens?
Well, yes. There's a very good model that there's three ingredients to the northern lights. We need charged particles from the sun that come from a solar flare. It's called the coronal mass ejection. But the particles have to hit the Earth. Most of the solar flares miss the Earth, but the ones that do hit the Earth are trapped in the magnetic field around the Earth, and the magnetic fields emerge from near the polar regions. So there's northern lights and southern lights. So we need the charged particles from the sun, the magnetic field, and the third ingredient are the different gases in the upper atmosphere. And it's the gases that are energized by the charged particles that cause the northern lights and the different colors we see.
That's very fascinating. What kind of artwork is going to be at the? Is it just going to be photographs or all
kinds? No, it won't be photographs. It's going to be actual paintings. And some of the 19th century paintings are in monochrome. The more modern paintings are in color.
Are they like oil paintings, acrylic?
All that.
The medium?
And
oh, okay.
Watercolor.
Okay. Oh, well, that sounds
And that'll be presented by Christina De La Rosa, one of our volunteers at the planetarium.
Okay. What kind of people usually end up being volunteers there? Is it like science buffs or actual scientists or just people interested in space?
Well, all of that. I'm a scientist, but our other volunteers are people who work on electronics, people who are programmers, and other people who just have an interest in astronomy, who are amateur astronomers. So we have a wide variety. We also have an 11-year-old girl who does our posters and also operates our projector. So we have a wide range of ages and interests of people who volunteer for the planetarium. And anyone is encouraged who wants to be a volunteer at the planetarium and run the controls.
Why is it important for people to know about the cosmos? Why do we have a day, astronomy day?
Well, astronomy is one of the oldest sciences. People have been looking at the night sky for thousands of years, and it's awe-inspiring, and it shows us the vastness of nature, and it's also opened up a lot of different fields of science, relativity theory, and subatomic particles and gravitation theory have all been studied through astronomy.
How is it related to Earth Day? There's one that has to do with space and one that has to do with the Earth. Is it related?
Well, Earth Day and Astronomy Day both open our minds to things much larger than ourselves, how we're connected to things in nature. But they're not really directly connected.
Oh, okay. Well, it's a good coincidence, though. You can learn about science tomorrow at National Astronomy Day at the Planetarium. Tomorrow, April 20th, it's really all day at the Planetarium, right? 11 a.m. to 7 p.m.
Yeah, we'll have our the actual shows would be at 11 a.m., 4 p.m., and 6 p.m., but we'll be available for anyone who has questions or anyone who wants to learn how to volunteer at the Planetarium or use the Planetarium controls. We'll have volunteers available for that.
Great. Steve, thank you so much for stopping by.
Thank you so much for having me.
No problem.
are fashioned by the gentle winds. The silent dome of stars appears, the canopy of night descends. Hidden treasures then are found, their subtle glory sweeps the eye. And the gifts of peace are handed down to watchers of the mighty sky. Orion, you would have to go so far. From Brooklyn Park to Cassiopeia.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Friday, the 19th of April, 2013. It's the birthday of John Agee, born Nyack, New York, 1959, along the Hudson River, cartoonist for The New Yorker, and writer, illustrator, many children's books. Right after college, he took some of his drawings to a publisher who insisted that Agee write a story to go along with the illustrations, and so Agee wrote exactly two sentences about a child who dreams that his grandpa becomes Santa. And that picture story became his first published book, If Snow Falls, got great reviews when it came out in 1982. Many of John Agee's books revolve around wordplay. They're books of palindromes, words or phrases which read forwards or backwards, including his book Go Hang a Salami, I'm a Lasagna Hog, and other palindromes, and So Many Dynamos, and Other Palindromes, 1994, and another one from 1999, Sit on a Potato Pan, Otis. He's also composed a book of 60 oxymorons entitled Who Ordered the Jumbo Shrimp, which includes illustrations of sharp curves and a stiff drink and the Great Depression. It's the birthday of the poet Etheridge Knight, born in Corinth, Mississippi, 1931, arrested for robbery, sent to the Indiana State Prison in 1960, and it was there, he said, that he started writing poetry. It was on this day, 1927, actress Mae West was jailed for her performance in a Broadway play entitled Sex. She served 10 days in prison, and it made her reputation forever. It was on this day, 1944, in Amsterdam, Anne Frank wrote in her diary, "Is there anything more beautiful in the world than to sit before an open window and enjoy nature, to listen to the birds singing, feel the sun on your cheeks, and have a darling boy in your arms?" 3 months later, the family was discovered in the secret annex and arrested and sent off to concentration camps. And it was on this day in 1897 the Boston Marathon was run for the first time. It's the world's oldest annual marathon. Women were not allowed to run until 1972, but in 1967, Catherine Switzer registered anyway. She was assigned a number. She started the race. When an official saw her, he chased her. He tried to rip off her number. A fellow runner pushed him out of the way, and Catherine Switzer crossed the finish line. Last year, 42% of the 21,000 marathon runners were women. Here's a poem for today by Robert Louis Stevenson. "I will make you brooches and toys for your delight, of birdsong at morning and starshine at night. I will make a palace fit for you and me, of green days in forests and blue days at sea. I will make my kitchen, and you shall keep your room, where white flows the river and bright blows the broom. And you shall wash your linen and keep your body white in rainfall at morning and dewfall at night. And this shall be for music when no one else is near, the fine song for singing, the rare song to hear, that only I remember, that only you admire, of the broad road that stretches and the roadside fire." I Will Make You Brooches, poem by Robert Louis Stevenson. That's the Writer's Almanac, supported by the Poetry Foundation, offering poetry podcasts to listen to and thousands of poems to read at poetryfoundation.org, and by the Mosaic Foundation of Rita and Peter Hayden, based in Ann Arbor, honoring the literary arts and the universe of great ideas. Produced by Joy Biles, be well. Do good work and keep in touch.
Are you considering alternative educational options for your student? Consider HomeBridge, a program that builds the link between school and home. HomeBridge allows up to 2 classes at local high schools with no allotment reduction and makes sports, theater, and other activities possible within the Juneau School District. HomeBridge offers parents a direct educational connection with their child. For more information, call 209-HOME or log into homebridge.junoschools.org. Enroll now for the 2013-14 school year. This message brought to you by the Juneau School District.
And we're back on a Juneau afternoon, and I'm here with my next two guests, KJ Metcalf and the former Alaska Supreme Court Justice, Judge Walter Carpinetti, and they are here to talk about an event that's happening on Monday, April 22nd at the Northern Lights Church at 7 p.m., and it's called Life After Prison Panel and Community Discussion. So what is this event all about?
Judge, maybe you could start off.
Well, sure. I was contacted a while back by KJ saying that the group that he represents, Juneau's People for
Peace and Justice.
Were interested in doing a program on closing the revolving door, in effect, trying to reduce the rate of recidivism that is so high in this state as it is in many states. And there's a lot going on in that field now, and I said I'd be happy to do that. So we've put together a panel of people who I think are knowledgeable in the area to talk about what is being done and what can be done to cut down the rate of recidivism.
And for those who might not know, what does recidivism mean?
Good question. Sorry, I should define my terms. It's the rate at which persons who are released from prison return to prison, commit new crimes. And it is held depressingly steady at between 65% and 70% within a three-year period of one's release. So that's an awful lot of people that are essentially cycling in and out of jail.
I might mention I'm working with a young man, 35 years old, who has a disability. His mother drank during pregnancy, so he has a fetal alcohol spectrum disorder. But 35 years old, he's been arrested 45 times, and he's facing another trial in May. And he is kind of the poster child, I think, for some of the issues that we're dealing with as a community. And this rate of reoffending is so expensive. It's expensive for the state to house people in prison, and there's cost, the humanity cost is significant. And so if there's a way to simply cut that down, it's in everybody's benefit. I might add that the United States has more people per capita in prison than any other country in the world. Alaska, depending on where you get your numbers, is in the top 10 states, or at least the top half, of having the greatest per capita population in prison. So we have to start, I think, looking at the issues and figuring out how can we do this differently. We would hope that this conversation Monday night is the first of several, where we might look at alternatives to incarceration. We might look at what restorative justice might look like, rather than kind of the punitive justice model that we seem to embrace as a state and country.
And so what are some of the issues surrounding recidivism? Do people in working in this field, in the social work field, or in the field that you two are in studying this recidivism rate, do we know what the issues are surrounding recidivism?
Well, it's a big question, but I think we can start with a few areas. For one, it's proven that in certain respects, treatment of persons can be effective. If you take a person who's got problems and you put him or her in jail for 3 to 5 years, and there's no treatment at all, and they're, you know, living a pretty limited life, and they're associating with a lot of people that have problems, it's not rocket science to say they're probably going to come out worse than when they went in. And if that happens, all we've done is taken 2 or 3 or 5 years of somebody's life, paid a lot of money for it because prisons are incredibly expensive, and produce somebody that's in worse shape when they get out. So the first thing is to have the right to have treatment programs in jail, and to have the right kind of treatment programs. A second thing is to kind of prepare for the time that they're going to be released and try to work with those folks to get them the kind of job training they need, the kind of job interview skills they need, the kind of housing assistance, or setting them on the right path there, the kind of substance abuse programs. It's a whole group of things that can be done. But and historically, the state has done more and less, and unfortunately, about 10 or 12 years ago, it really cut back on the programs, and it's only in the last several years that they've been building them back up again, and hopefully that'll have the kind of effect that one expects that it would. But that's just one thing. There's a lot of things. There's our laws. We have thousands, actually, of consequences of a conviction that are called collateral, and it's and by that I mean it's not the jail sentence or the fine that you have to pay, but it's things like you're not eligible for certain programs, you can't hold certain kinds of jobs. And you would think that there'd be some collateral consequences, and there are literally thousands. And studies are underway to look at what are all the collateral consequences of a conviction, and do they really serve the rehabilitation of the offender, and the benefit of the society as a whole. So there's probably some legal changes that can be made too, and there's other things, but I don't want to just keep talking all the time.
I might add that Alaska has housed over 1,000 prisoners outside in Colorado at Hudson Jail, and I've been down there several times, and it's very depressing because you go in, you know, over 1,000 Alaskans in this one jail, and you go into the waiting or the visiting room, and maybe there's 3 or 4 prisoners that have visitors because it's so far, so expensive. And I think studies show that if a prisoner has family support and can stay in contact with the family, and not just through phone calls, but contact visiting or at least secure visiting, that the prisoner is going to do better and is going to appreciate that support. And that's an important aspect of how well that prisoner is going to do when they're released. So the fact that we're now moving a number of those prisoners back to Alaska, I think, is a good thing. But the Goose Creek Prison up in the Matsu Valley is a wonderful new state-of-the-art prison, but it does need the programs.
And that's the brand new prison that's right. Opened at the Matsu Valley. Oh. I heard this term you mentioned earlier, restorative justice. Could you explain a little bit about what that means?
Oh, boy. I'm probably not the best person to talk about it, but we pretty much have a model of punitive justice. And restorative justice takes a kind of a different model where you gather the people together who have been injured as well as the offender, and you give them opportunity to communicate back and forth and to take responsibility for the actions that have occurred. And what is it going to take to heal the community? What is it going to take to heal the victims? What is it going to take to heal the perpetrator? And you work on that so that people come out of the process with a much better feeling that justice has been done and that they do see some healing. And I don't know, you might want to comment on that.
Sure, yeah, I think that's a great summary of it. Some specific examples in Alaska include circle sentencing that Magistrate Mike Jackson down in Cake has been doing for a number of years that involves a lot of these principles. Magistrate Chris McLean up in Galena has been doing it and has been kind of working with the court system to assemble a team of a prosecutor, a defense lawyer, a judge, a superior court judge if it's a more serious case, or the magistrate can handle the less serious ones. And they've gone to different villages and they've gone through this process. And it's, you know, I think it's something that might not be applicable in every case, obviously, but can be very helpful in a lot of cases. And actually, I think some of the principles of restorative justice are in play in our therapeutic courts, which are in many cities around the state, including here in Juneau. Judge Keith Levy runs a therapeutic court in Juneau, and which aims more at solving the problems that are presented by the offender and that require the offender to go through a lot of treatment and to report back to the court, like on a weekly basis. But it's a very different model from the punitive one that KJ talked about, which 40 years ago when I started was basically what we had. It was, I guess I could summarize it as, if you did the time, you can do if you did the crime, you can do the time. And that was it. Commit a crime, go to jail. And theoretically, a person learns from that and never does it again. Well, it doesn't work that way. I mean, that might be the theory, but in practice, people go into jail, they don't get any kind of programs, they don't get any kind of treatment, they hang around with other folks that have a lot of problems for a period of time, and they come out worse. That's not working. It's a real expensive system that doesn't work. We're trying to change that.
I think one of the issues I've worked a lot with, and Northern Light Church has done an awful lot with, are fetal alcohol spectrum disorder. And it's not just a native issue. A lot of people think it is, but it's across the board. But what happens with somebody whose mother drank during pregnancy is that their brain can be severely damaged. They may look normal, act normal, but they cognitively, they can't make decisions, and they can't remember, and they don't learn from consequences, and they don't associate consequences with what they're doing. So They may get out of jail and turn around, right around and do the same thing again that they did and say, why am I back in jail?
I have a question from a listener. He asks, he or she asks, who will be on the panel on Monday?
Yeah, great question. There will be at least four other people. One, Michelle Federico, who is works out at Gastineau House, the community halfway house, in charge of client services, I believe. She's the director there. Keith Levy, who is the judge of the district court here in Juneau, who I mentioned, who, among other things, runs the therapeutic court. Michael Hutcherson with the Juneau Job Center, kind of focusing on the employment aspect of reentry. And Carmen Marino, who is an ex-offender and who has some fairly strong ideas on what works and what doesn't. And so those are the persons at this time on the panel.
Is this discussion going to be open to everybody, to the entire population?
Well, absolutely. We invite anybody in the community, and there will be opportunity for the folks in the audience to raise questions to the panel and have some conversation. So we really see this as a community conversation.
All right. Is there any other information that you'd like to add or give out to the folks listening for this event that you want them to know that might be interested in coming?
Well, I just hope folks will show up, and I just think it's an amazing opportunity to have this panel and the level of expertise and experience that we have there to sit down and talk about issues and perhaps solutions that are so important to our community.
KJ Metcalf and Judge Carpinetti, I want to thank you both so much for coming in. The event is happening at Northern Lights Church at 7 p.m. on Monday, April 22nd, and it's called Life After Prison. And is there, yes?
Let me just add one thing, if I might.
Yes.
One thing that we hope to focus on is really nuts and bolts things that people in the community that are interested in this topic can help with. Katie Chapman, who's the head of the Juneau Reentry Coalition, a new group aimed at trying to help with this problem of recidivism, can't be there, but I'm hoping that, but a number of our panelists are on work with that Juneau Reentry Coalition, and I'm hopeful that people that are interested in this and that might think, hey, I could help in this area or I could do something in this area, might be interested in showing up and asking their questions. And I totally back what KJ said. We want it to be interactive. We'll take any questions from the audience on anything having to do with this subject.
I think it's important to really understand the huge hurdles that a released offender faces in reentering the community, getting a job, getting their children back, getting their credit back, having a place to live, being able to afford all of this. Juneau is not an inexpensive place to live. And those are serious issues that the community can help solve, and we hope that this is just an opportunity to discuss some of that.
One last question. Is there a website people can go to get some more information about all of this?
No, not that I'm aware of.
Oh, okay. What is a good number for people to call?
586-3131.
All right. And is there anything else you'd like to, either of you would like to add?
Oh, I just want to thank you for having us here. It's been great.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I hear the train a-coming. It's rolling around the bend. And I ain't seen the sunshine since I don't know when. I'm stuck in Folsom Prison, and time keeps dragging on. But that train keeps rolling down to San Antone. When I was just a baby, my mama told me, son, always be a good boy, don't ever play with guns. But I shot a man in Reno just to watch him die. When I hear that whistle blowing, I hang my head and cry.
12 ensembles, 8 cities, 0 scripts. The Alaska State Improv Festival outstrips your imagination. Alaska groups and troops from around the nation, from New York to L.A., from Boston to Austin, at McPheeters Hall for 3 nights of inspiration, made up on the spot as you watch. April 18 to 20, shows at 7 and 9 p.m., tickets at Hearthside, The Jack, and The Door. Visit asifest.com for more. This message is brought to you by Morally Impoverished.
I want to thank all my guests today, and tune in on Monday at 3 for a Juno Afternoon. Joan Pardes hosts. We'll get details on infant immunization and World Immunization Week. We'll talk to author Lee Newman about her book, Still Points North. We'll get information about the workshops during Money Smart Week. And we'll get a preview of this weekend's performance by the theater at Latitude 58, Alice's Adventures in Wonderland, That Writer's Almanac, Bird Note, and more, Monday at 3 on KTOO News. Stay tuned. Coming up next is All Things Considered.
We'll